Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Scott. How are you? Hi, everybody.
Today's the day.
It is.
Today is
live.
Today is National Michelle Day.
Yes.
We're going to have fun today. Before we do, interesting thing has happened here at Scotland Grove, which for those of you that may not know, Scotland, we have a grove at the back of the house where my labyrinth sits and my wife's thing, building structure exists. But then there's a grove. There are orange trees and avocado and grapefruit and peach and plum and all these wonderful things. Well, as the trees mature, as we get to know this house, remember, we've been here now 4 years. Not a long time in the history of homes. As we have planted and moved in and been here, nature is coming to us. And so we've already had a fox. I've now been informed of where the fox went. I thought the fox had abandoned me. But Isabel, that's what I named the fox. So I actually wrote a kid's story that I've not published yet because I haven't looked for a publisher. But it's a kid's story about Isabel the fox and what happened when she decided to move into our backyard. I've now been told that Isabel has had babies and Isabel has moved up the street to a different location, but she's still here. Now, the interesting thing, however, is that with all the new growth and all the fruit coming in, et cetera, and the harvest that we're doing, this is now, today is now the second hawk that has not just been flying over, it's landed in the backyard. And it sits there. And these are gorgeous, gorgeous creatures. And, you know, the interesting thing for me, and I thought that we kind of would start the discussion today, is how to coexist with nature. We talked even in our last show about being one with everything, right? But at what point, at what point do you stop being at one with things, right? I've got a little dog that this hawk could pick this up. This hawk could pick that up. So I had to go in the back today and clear the backyard and after taking pictures and posting it on social media. But I, cause it was gorgeous. That said, I went for one of my walks, and right behind us, I am constantly seeing what I thought were white doves flying around in a circle, and then they would go back down to our neighbor's home behind us. And I happened to be walking by a couple days ago, and I noticed that Jose had chickens in the front yard. It's like, I've never seen these chickens. I've never seen free range, honest to God. They're just free range chickens. And
that's
one
how mystery. I like my eggs.
Right? So free range chickens. And then there's a dog bat over there. And then all these birds, which, by the way, I was very brave. You'd be proud of me, Michelle, because I looked up and all these white frickin' doves that I thought were doves are sitting on the power lines above me as I'm walking under them.
That is brave.
So I'm noticing that, and I'm noticing this hawk, and I think it's beautiful. I don't want to get in my dog, but let's keep distance between each other. You do what you need to do. And so the other day after that, I talked to Jose and I said, have you noticed there are some hawks lately? And he got very upset. And he said, those hawks sit in that tree and they attack the chickens. And they're going after the little baby chicks and they're going after the eggs. He said, yeah, so it's a very interesting thing, right? My perspective of what a beautiful creature.
A hawk might
and
be.
He just wants it gone. And right. And we got to talk.
Like that time the hawk attacked our little red birds in our tree. We were really
there you
pissed.
Go. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's an interesting exploration for me because I am not ambivalent about it. I'm not one of those guys that says nature takes its course. Because I don't want anything hurt. And yet there's a cycle of life, right? We happen to where I'm living, there's a mountain lion that has been going around, and unbeknownst to me, the area where this mountain lion is only a couple miles away.
Mm-hmm.
We have a conservancy over there, a nature area. And I didn't realize that the roaming range of a mountain lion is 100 miles.
Wow.
Yeah.
100 miles.
So I've been told. Now, here's the interesting thing. People have been posting pictures of this mountain lion sitting on the doorsteps of the hospital here.
Oh.
And I, of course, made the joke. Well, at least it knows where to find meat. Now, it has not attacked anybody, but okay. we happen in this conservation area. There is a plethora. There's an overabundance of wild donkeys and mules, and they're not controlling them. And these things are breeding and they're everywhere. And
okay. Well, like the peacocks of Pasadena.
Ooh, yeah, exactly.
Those are crazy.
And the mountain lion has discovered them. The donkeys. And it's like, you know, at what point, you and I've never really discussed, at what point do we live at one with
you
nature?
This is an area of my personal growth, and, you know, this is real time learning. So a year from now, will I feel the same? I have no idea, but I have not reached the point in my personal growth where I don't kill bugs when they're in my house. Yeah. I know a lot of people will escort the little spider out of the house or whatever little mealy bug, or that's not me. And because I grow a garden and there's certain bugs that destroy my plants, there are bugs that I am a predator of because I'm trying to protect my plants. So I haven't figured it out yet.
I have not, but I will tell you, I grew up in a family that you don't kill things. You put them outside.
Wow.
I've told people before my story of spiders, right? I was trying my anxiety of spiders started when my sister and I were in the bathroom and we were going to catch a spider that was in the bathroom with a glass, clear glass. And we'd always catch the bug and put the paper under it and then carry the whole thing outside.
Wow.
And I went to put the glass on top of the spider and excuse my language, folks, but the fucking thing jumped. and it was at that point, literally, I'm thinking back right now, it was like, wait, spiders don't jump. Spiders scurry. Spiders run. Spiders spin web. This freaking jumped.
Yeah,
and it was like suddenly at that point, my head went into all these stories of if it jumps, it could jump on me. And if it jumps on me, it could bite me. And that's not good.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so all those things. And then we went to Alabama, where part of my wife's family is from. And I don't know about the rest of you folks, but they grow spiders in Alabama the size of small dogs.
Oh, yes, they do.
So it's just like really,
it's very intense. And Arizona, too. Never seen live tarantulas like I did up on the mountain of Sedona.
My sister just sent me a picture. She lives in Arizona. Sent me a picture of. She said, "Look at this spider," and I said, "That's not a freaking spider.
It's a dog."
That's a dog.
It has
with eight legs, exactly. And she just kind of laughs because she was there with me and she knows I don't like them. But we were in Alabama, and we were staying at my wife's family's house there. And her dad walked out one morning and he had his hand cupped.
What?
And I knew he had something in his hand. And I walked over to him. I said, "What do you?" And I went, "Oh my God.
Yes.
It's a scorpion."
Oh.
And he's
and it
got
didn't it. Bite him?
And he's got it in his open hand.
Or
and I said, "What are you doing with that?" And he said, oh, it was in the shower. I'm putting it outside.
Holy camoly.
I don't know that I would be so gracious.
No.
I don't know.
Well, somebody else would have to do it if they wanted to put it outside. I would not hold a scorpion in my hand. I am not at one with the bugs. Now, I will tell you, there are these really cute kind of gecko lizards that are around our home, and they love eating certain kinds of bugs.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of them, like they have like a red throat when they breathe. And mm-hmm. there's this one, I don't know if he's still around. He might not have made it through the last winter, but he used to sit on the little frame of my door, my office window door, and he would just do these little push-ups, and then he'd put his little thing out. And I swear to you, I was like, you are showing off for me, aren't you? I had a love of this little gecko guy, but don't jump on me. Don't jump on me. I'm not cool.
Really?
With a little lizard jumping on me, because it's happened.
I'll let you know a little known fact of Scott. Would you like to know?
Yes, I would.
I'm going to say but actually my wife, we used to raise bearded dragons.
Well, how cool.
And we're talking like incubators and aquariums and the whole nine yards. Oh. And so it's funny when you say jumping on you, it's like, it's a freaking lizard.
Yeah. But why'd you stop? If you used to do it, why'd you stop?
We moved.
Oh, you moved and downsized. Okay.
It became logistically not really good anymore.
Okay. Got it.
So, all right.
Those are some cool, they cool are wonderful. Lizards.
And I know, by the way, the whole puffiness and the changing and the whole head bobbing ritual that they go through. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Is it mating, right?
Exactly.
I thought they were trying to mate me. I was like, I know you. Yeah,
they were flirting with you.
They're flirting with me. I was like, I see you flirting.
There you go. I got you. All right. So now that we've uncovered some of that, let's celebrate National Michelle Day.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And I will tell you what I thought would be fun to do.
Okay.
And that is to ask you a number of questions. And these are along the lines of something that I first heard about on the Actors Studio. And it comes from, it's called the Proust questionnaire, but it's more than that. It's more. They know it. Vanity Fair calls it the Proust questionnaire, but it's going to go deeper than that.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, I actually have made it somewhat of a little hobby. I have a particular Proust questionnaire, and I reach out and write to people that I look up to, living, real, honest to God people. And I ask them if I can send this to them, and that I would love to know more about them. Would they answer the questions? And I have promised them that I will not publish it without their consent. And that it'll stay between us. And I've got to tell you, I've got some of the most amazing responses from people that our listeners would know, but I'm not at liberty to do it. I'm not at liberty to share, but it's my little thing. And I thought I would extend this to you today. And I want to give a little history to people where this came from.
Okay.
So it actually goes back to the late 1800s, 1886 to be exact. And I'm probably going to butcher their names because they are French, but Antoinette Faure, F-A-U-R-E, who was the daughter of the future French president, was playing a game, and she asked one of her friends, Marcel Proust, to fill out a questionnaire in a book that the book is called Confessions, an album to record thoughts, feelings, etc.
Wow.
And so it was a parlor game back in the late 1800s, particularly amongst the Victorian upper class, and they were called confession albums. So we're going to do a bunch of confessions today.
Oh, wow. Okay. And,
the interesting thing is that Proust filled this out. It was a game. They didn't think anything of it. But what happened is that years later, this album got published, and it was published first in French, and it was called Les Confidences des Salons. And then it turned into 5 years later, Oscar Wilde, who I think most people have heard about, he wrote in something called Mental Photographs, an album for confessions of tastes, habits, and convictions.
Wow.
And then you find out that Arthur Conan Doyle and Paul Cézanne and all these other famous people, they all filled these out too. All of these questionnaire answers are floating around out there. And this has been going on for a long time, including in 1924, a republication of all this stuff. So we're going to reinvent it today, if you don't mind.
All right. Okay.
Again,
certainly in good company.
Not only that, but we're going to add to Proust's it's not Proust's questionnaire, even though it's called the Proust questionnaire. We're going to add to it some questions from Bernard Pivot.
Okay.
P-I-V-O-T. I don't believe it's pronounced pivot. Many of you will have heard of Pivot's questions because James Lipton used a lot of them on Actor Studio. He synthesized them. So okay. we're going to do that. And I thought that it might be fun for the next half hour,
okay,
maybe a little less, if we just kind of go through and I'll introduce you to some of the Proust questions and I'll introduce you to some of the Pivot questions.
Okay.
And we'll analyze you. What do you think?
Okay. Okay. All right.
So we're going to start off easy, right? And I'm going to start off with some of the Pivot questions.
Okay.
What is your favorite word?
Juxtaposition.
I'm not judging. Seriously, that's your favorite word.
That's my absolute favorite word. It came to me right away. It was one of the first SAT words I learned in high school. And I learned it because I was in art class. Art helped me survive high school. High school was really very clicky and tough. And I used to sneak off into art school or art class because the teacher would keep the class open in breaks and things like that. And she used the word in class to talk about, you know, how size and perspective and or different mediums could be juxtaposed and like the contrast. And I just loved that word. I didn't know what it meant. I figured it out. I mean, I think I was, art class started in seventh grade. We had a 7th through 12th grade high school. So 7th grade, I would have been somewhere between 7th and 12th grade. Wow. And it's just always been, and whenever it's really funny because I will have clients that will use the word, like they'll say, oh, it's juxtapose this or juxtaposition or blah, blah, blah. And like, I have this little twinkle in my heart when the word gets said, still to this day.
I'll have to figure out how to start using that word more in our podcast. All right. What is your least favorite word?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it on the air.
Well, you can say whatever you want on the air, but you can just give the beginning letter and the end one.
Well, it starts with a C and it ends with a T.
Either way, one of the words I was told you may never say.
I know, but you know, I love a lot of British humor and British people use it like
they do
all the time. And I don't know why when it comes from somebody who's British, it doesn't bother me. Like I'm starting to become numb to it. But it's used so negatively in America. So when an American calls a woman that word, it has a vitriol connected to it that in England, it's like, it like has a lightness connected to it. Like, oh, you silly guy or you silly girl or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it just all doesn't right. have the same. But
still,
my least favorite word. I think.
It's your least favorite word. I completely understand. What's your favorite sound?
It's interesting. So the first thing that came to mind was because it's a sound. It's an onomatopoeia, which would be maybe my second favorite word.
Second favorite word.
Onomatopoeia. But I don't think that's my favorite sound. My favorite sound. Today, my favorite sound is the sound of my partner coming home and saying something like, hi, love. That's my favorite sound. I love hearing the sound of his voice. Wonderful. When we're reconnected.
So I wasn't going to annotate, but I am going to annotate just a bit here, because I actually use a shortened version of this form whenever I interview people to hire.
Uh-huh.
Right? If I want to know somebody.
Uh-huh.
And I've got to tell you this great story. I'm going doing exactly what I've done with you. And this individual who was applying to be an attorney for me, I asked, what is your favorite sound? And without missing a beat, he said, the sound of a toilet flushing.
Why?
So when I ask these questions, other than today, I normally don't ask why. But when someone says to me their favorite sound is the sound of a toilet flushing, it just begs.
Why?
And I said, why? And he said, because it's the sound of shit getting done.
That is an amazing answer.
I did not hire him.
Oh.
Not going to happen.
Okay.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. What is your least favorite sound?
Something really like... I really don't like the sound of lawn, like the leaf blower. That the leaf blower, because oftentimes I'm sitting here on my session trying to concentrate and that thing's going in the background. It's just a really annoying sound, I think. Well, I guess nails on a chalkboard is like, but I don't hear that very often. So the leaf blower is my least favorite sound at this point in my life.
Right. What is your favorite cuss word?
Fuck. There's nothing else that rings as well as that word.
It makes sense. So this then leads to a number of very interesting questions. Now that we've gotten warmed up.
Okay.
What turns you on spiritually, emotionally, or creatively? Now, I'm going to tell you that was changed by James Lipton. The Pivot actually asked the question, and we're not going to do this here, but he actually asked the question, what's your favorite drug?
Oh, what's your favorite drug?
But we're going to move. It got modified to what turns you on? What turns you on creatively, emotionally?
That's such a different question.
Or spiritually.
That's so funny. Because my favorite drug would be Tylenol at this point in my life. But what turns me on? I'm not going to get the quote right. But there is something that happens when I'm in a session with a client and you see the light bulb go off, the light bulb moment where there's a change, you can feel the change. And I usually get goosebumps. And there's something about witnessing that change that is, it's unremarkable. It's probably the reason why I've been a therapist for as long as I have. And keep coming back, because witnessing people's change just lights me up.
And by the way, for listeners, as a coach and a therapist as you are, you can see it. It's palpable.
See it. Oh yeah, you see it. There's either like a choking of the voice, or there's tears that happen, or there's a light that like comes over someone's body. There's a lightness. There's nothing like it. Right. And to know that I've been a part of that somehow is, all right. Best use of my time ever.
Got it. So what turns you off?
Hatred, racism, sexism, all the isms. I just don't understand it.
Any ism?
All the negative isms.
Negative isms. Okay.
You know, all the negative isms, racism, like people being, what did I just see on we have this TV channel where you can get news from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And we were turning on some country. I don't know what it was, but there were people. Oh, you know what? You can get it from different areas. And I think this was a main channel because we're headed up there. We're headed up to Prince Edward Island and New Brunswick and Toronto. Anyway, so we were looking for the weather in Maine, and there was a group of people protesting a bus of immigrants. And I just thought, like, you know, how many people protested Ellis Island, you know, and all the immigrants, how many of us, we're like, America is a refugee country. We are a country of immigrants.
Okay, right? Like, JFK called it a nation of immigrants.
That's how we were founded. And I understand there's concerns about your area getting overpopulated. I understand, like, city planning issues, but I just don't understand, like, being mean and violent and gross against a bunch of people coming in on a bus, you know, trying to survive their life. I just don't like
okay, that makes
that
sense.
Kind of stuff. All right. Turns me off.
What profession, other than your own, would you like to attempt?
Oh, dang. Well, I've always wanted to be a rock star, but I don't have a singing voice, so, and I can't play any music, so I'm not going to attempt it. But what other profession would I like to attempt besides my own? Either real estate or, like, stock investments is coming to mind.
Oh, I could see you doing those.
I find those both super fascinating. Helping people find a home that they live in. I love my clients that are real estate agents. They're just such cool people. Investing in stocks and helping people build towards their future and save towards the future. That's very exciting to me.
All right. Other than your current profession, what profession would you not like to attempt?
A professional dishwasher. I detest the idea of standing all day on my feet and washing food that has washing particularly silverware. Like, that's been in people's mouths. It's hard for me to put our own, like, just me and Brian's silverware in the dishwasher machine. It just grosses me out. I don't know what it is. Like, something about all that saliva and, you know, ugh.
Wow. Okay. Like, I got it. All right.
Not doing that.
Presuming you believe, just presume for the sake of this question, that you believe in reincarnation.
Okay.
If you were reincarnated as some other plant or animal, what would it be?
Oh, wow. So many choices. I have to pick one or the other because I think I have an answer for both. I would love to be an oak tree if I were going to be reincarnated as another. I love trees. And oak trees are kind of old and wise, and they hang around a long time, and they're sturdy. And I just think it would be kind of cool to witness the earth for a long period of time. And if I were going to be reincarnated as another, oh, I know. If I'm going to be reincarnated as an animal, my real answer is I would like to come back as the dog of a gay couple.
Okay.
Because all my friends who are gay, who have dogs, those dogs are the best cared for. Well, maybe Scott's dog. Scott's dog would be the other exception. Like, their dogs are so well cared for, and the dogs run the roost.
I would feed you Nilla wafers.
Oh my God.
As a little treat.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Like, I want to run
moderation, in moderation, listeners.
I want to sleep and play and bark and fetch a ball and cuddle. And
my dog's got scrambled eggs this morning with a little hint of bacon taste on it.
See, that's why I would want to be reincarnated as your dog.
All right, we're gonna jump from the Pavot questions over to some of the Proust ones. I'm gonna come back to one final Pavot question at the very end, and you'll see why I jumped around.
Okay.
What is your idea of perfect happiness?
Oh, having enough means that I'm not worried about money, feeling a sense of inner peace, a relaxed day where I don't have to wake up to an alarm, a night of good rest, maybe some like the idea of that feeling of walking on the beach, either day or under the skylight. Like, so perfect. Say the question again, because I'm kind of describing my perfect day.
Well, it's just perfect happiness.
Perfect happiness is peace. It's like a sense of peace and calm. Your needs are met. You know, you can walk through life and enjoy its beauty, and you're not worried about anything.
All right. Which living person do you most admire?
Michelle Obama, I think. I mean, any person that can keep her husband looking at her like that while he's the president of the United States for 8 years has got to have a secret sauce that I want to bottle. Plus, she's just really such an advocate for people, for health, for, you know, growth. I just really appreciate her right now. That's the first person that came to mind.
Perfect. What is your greatest extravagance?
Oh, well, coming from a childhood where a fancy meal out might have been fast food or, you know, something like, well, we would call it the Ponderosa, or it would be called like the Sizzler now. Okay. Like, it was a poor childhood. I love fancy chefy tasting menus where you watch the chefs and they interact with you and they bring you all these little fancy bites that they put together that are farmed. So that is my extravagance, is
okay,
fancy chefy tasting menus.
All right. We're going to do a quick little check-in. What is okay. your current, what is your current state of mind?
I'm happy. I don't know if there's any more to say about that. I just feel really happy right now.
Wonderful. So now that you're happy, what is the quality you like most in a man?
To name just one. Okay, so funny story. First thing that came to mind is a good credit score, because that's the thing that made me turn on to Brian when we were like friends having dinner and discussing our credit scores. I was like, oh my God, he's responsible. This is amazing. But in reality, it's a kind person, a kind-hearted, giving, kind person. Nothing beats that.
What is the quality you like most in a woman?
I think it's similar. A kind person with a good heart, who means well, who does the best they can, who's giving. Yeah.
All right. Which words or phrases do you most overuse?
Uh-huh. Brian, my partner, told me I say that too much on the podcast. I try to pay attention to it, but it's so hard not to say uh-huh. So uh-huh is overused. What words or phrases? I notice what words or phrases are overused in our current colloquial that I really am annoyed by. Like,
no, I didn't know. I know. I'm just asking you what you most overuse.
I probably overuse, does that make sense? It's very important for me to feel like the people I'm talking to are understanding me and following.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which talent would you most like to have?
Singing. I want to be a rock star. I want to be the best singer. Again.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I want to be an incredible singer. I want to kill it at karaoke. I want to book backyard barbecues.
All right. What do you consider your greatest achievement?
Greatest achievement. It seems like there should maybe be more than these, but probably getting licensed as a therapist. It was such a monumental feat of 5 years of effort. I've done cool things since then, but they didn't take me 5 solid years of life. Yeah, so that getting licensed as a therapist is probably my greatest achievement.
Where would you like most to live?
This is the answer that we are constantly talking about all the time. And I can't pinpoint one. because I haven't been to them all yet. Thailand's on the list. Costa Rica's on the list. Panama City, Portugal. I think it would be, if money was no object, it would be like some beautiful beach city in Spain.
Okay.
I think that's what, but even if I haven't been there yet.
What is your most treasured possession?
I'm so unattached to most things. Does it have to be like me? I'm my most treasured possession, but
you can go with that. That's fine.
Me.
All right.
I am the most important thing and the most precious thing that I have.
All right. Who are some of your favorite writers?
Well, you mentioned Marcel Proust earlier. That was really cool because, he has some amazing writings. I love Richard Bach. I like Richard Branson, speaking of another Richard. I love Pablo Neruda's poems. If you're talking about love poetry, and I don't even know who I have on my bookshelf right now. My bookshelf is in the other room. I just finished, because we're going to Prince Edward Island, I just finished another round of Anne of Green Gables. And that's kind of a childhood book favorite of mine. I'm terrible with names. Zora Neale.
Okay.
Zora Neale Hurston. Do you know that author?
I don't.
Okay. So I'm probably saying the name wrong. Terrible at names.
All right. We're coming towards the end here. So okay. we're almost done with the show today.
All right.
I trust you're having fun.
I am.
Which historical figure do you most identify with? I know you mentioned Michelle Obama looking up to her, but I'm asking now, who do you identify with?
There is a strong part of me that feels very Joan of Arc-y. I love standing up for the little guy. And I love looking for a way to create justice and change.
Okay. That said, who are your heroes in real life?
Oh. So I definitely would put Michelle Obama on that list. As kooky as she might seem politically, Marianne Williamson has done a lot of good in the world. I also like Deepak Chopra and Thich Nhat Hanh and the Dalai Lama, like people who try to bring understanding and growth in others are usually on my list.
Wonderful. All right, two more questions to go. What is your motto?
I should know this. It's changed so much over time. Ignite Your Life has been the one for the last 5 years.
Okay. Presuming God exists.
Uh-huh.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say to you when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I'm so proud of you, Michelle. You kicked ass.
Okay, that's the end of the questionnaire. By the way, there are many more questions. I didn't go into some of them for the sake of the format and for sake of time.
Okay.
But I've learned actually some things about you today.
Oh, did you?
I did. And I'm going to let this process as I go through this.
Hopefully you're not going to fire me because I did not say the toilet.
Well, here's the interesting thing. As I'm asking you these questions, I'm wondering what I would do if Michelle asked me these questions. I'm not sure I'm going to play with you, but that's okay.
Yeah, I want to ask you these questions. It's going to be National Scott Day soon.
National Scott Day.
But the difference is you have time to think about them. I had to answer them on the spot.
And I've been using these for quite a long time with people. So it's okay. It all works. All right. Next week, we are doing lessons from lifeguarding, which is going to be an interesting discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, can I ask you a question about these questions? Would you recommend that people actually use them like you have, reach out to others that they want to get to know and ask them if they might, answer them? Like, in what way might you see people using these questions aside from Michelle's answers and getting to know Michelle?
Number one, it's a fun party game. That's how it started and that's how it was used.
Okay.
We have actually done it here, by the way, doing exactly the same thing. When we have parties, we put out a book with these questions in it and we invite our party guests to actually write these down. That's another way you could do it.
That is so cool.
You can certainly reach out to some of your favorite people. And I'm not going to name names here, but it's amazing the people that you can reach now through the internet and the exchanges you can have. And who knows, maybe things will develop beyond that. But I've had some amazing inner exchanges with people and that have grown out of even suggesting this Prowse questionnaire, for lack of a better way to call it. Not everybody's going to want to answer it. Not everybody is going to, but it's a fun way to get to know people more.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all like not painful or difficult questions. They were just kind of fun.
There are some painful ones in there. I didn't go into those because I didn't want to deal with that.
Okay.
For this episode. But for those of you that when you pull up the Prowse questionnaire or the Pavot questionnaire, you'll see there are some deep ones in there, like your greatest fear and how do you want to die? And there are things like that. So,
okay.
All right. Anything you want to leave us on now that we know more about you?
I hope we didn't lose people along the way. Hopefully you had fun with me.
I love it. I love doing this stuff. So, all right. Until next week, please remember to like, share, and post on your favorite podcast platform so we continue to grow. And
yes,
with that,
please.
Happy Michelle Day.
Happy Michelle Day.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.